My creative process starts with, okay, you want to sell a hat or a beverage or a TV show or an electronic, understood. Now let me try to get a sense of what people care about today. What's their pain points? What's happening in popular culture? Where is their attention? Not potential reach, but actualized reach. So, you know, I reverse engineer the emotional truth. Like, is this going to give them more time with their kids? Is this going to make them look cool? Is this going to, you know, solve some sort of emotional or tangible problem? And then I try to communicate in that way.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I hope you've had some caffeine for our next session, which is Ask Gary V Live via video. Gary is ready and waiting to answer your questions live. So don't be shy. This is your chance to ask one of the biggest names in the advertising industry your questions. So please welcome, via the wonders of the internet, Gary V. Hello, Gary.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. Welcome to Mumbrella 360. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm really happy to be a part of this. It's really nice to see everybody.
I might just open up with what's your first sort of few words for everyone in the audience who is here about what brought you to Mumbrella 360?
You know, I've been public speaking for a long time, you know, 15 plus years. I've been in the advertising industry now for about 14 years. And so, you know, this is one of the real events that, you know, and I have a lot of respect for the people in the audience. I think a lot of people in the audience could be up here on stage, and the moderns of COVID taught people that we could do things more virtually. And so as I think everyone can tell, I'm in a hotel room. I have a board meeting in the morning here in Dallas, but I'm incredibly humbled to be with everybody. And I'm excited for this format. I love Q&A because I think you get into the details. A lot of the content I make, a lot of things I talk about publicly, you kind of got to go high level, the macro, but what Q&A does is lets you go a little bit more micro, double click into these things. And, you know, I think we're in a very interesting time in our industry and in marketing. There's a lot of changes with the consumer attention and the business world, and the timing felt right. And so I'm very humbled. Thank you for having me.
And we might go to the audience. Does anyone want to kick off with a question for Gary?
Hi, Gary, big fan. My name's Simone. I've just launched a creative agency 5 weeks ago called Supermassive. Just a little plug.
Congrats.
I'm interested in what your sort of point of view is on how we entertain people with advertising or the different forms of content we give them versus interrupting them with advertising.
You know, I think if this room is honest with itself, if this industry is honest with itself, I think most of our advertising is not entertaining. You know, I think we can all kind of accept that truth. I think when you look at the commercials across the world, and when you look at the far majority of creative in social media, definitely in digital banner form or pre-roll, like, you know, I think, what do I think? I think we should make more videos that people want to watch, but that is not the DNA of this industry. And I think we make advertising for awards. I think we make advertising for the industry magazines. I think we make advertising for corporate boardrooms, for each other. But I don't think this industry does a great job in making, you know, ads and videos and content that is actually entertaining. I don't see it. It's a challenge. I would argue that a lot of what VaynerMedia does is not achieving this goal either, because it's very hard to untrain creatives and strategists that were brought up in ad land to actually make contemporary creative that is feeding the appetite. And so, you know, clients get what they pay for too. They push, you know, GRPs and you know, brand positioning. It's got a ladder up to the brand and all these things that are very academic and very corporate and not very consumer. And I think our industry needs to really face these truths. And I'd like to see that happen. It's why, you know, first of all, congratulations. It's incredible. You've started your own company. It's epic. I'm cheering for you. And I think for me, you know, I'm surprised by the industry's incredible capacity to be tone deaf to what people want to watch. And I hope we do better, starting at VaynerMedia and hopefully the rest of the industry.
Thank you for the question. And thank you for that, Gary. We have another two questions at the back here. The mics are coming to you.
Hi, Gary. What's your thoughts on influencer marketing? We obviously, you know, the explosion of influencers across TikTok. Is it something that's going to deliver, or is it a waste of our time?
I think all forms of advertising have the potential to be underpriced and overpriced, deliver, and be a waste of time. So I've watched many influencer marketing campaigns be huge wastes. But it's a really great follow-up question to the last question. Influencers are much better at making videos that people want to watch than agencies. And again, these are things that we like have to reconcile and not put our heads in the sand on. So influencer marketing, don't forget, not only do you get the creative, you also get endorsement, word of mouth, endorsement, right? Badging, because they tend to come with audiences. And you get distribution. So you get the media, the creative, and the name, image, and likeness and cosign. So I think influencer marketing is incredibly impactful, incredibly important. It's a big part of how I see the world. But to your question, if you're not good at it and you're using the same influencer that everybody else uses, that and that audience has already known that that influencer has sold out, and you pay $15,000 for an execution together, you know, you could waste that money. On the flip side, you can get somebody who's very authentic, rarely does stuff, and you could spend $40,000 with them and get $400,000 value in return if you'd just done the standard marketing. So I think like every format in the world, there's overpriced and underpriced, there's good and there's bad. But as a net thing, I think influencer marketing is a very nice complement and part of the media mix that will continue to grow because people buy from people.
Thank you for the question. We've got two more here, one at the front and then one in the middle.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Just with your background, do you think a big issue with, I guess, agency types and PR is most of the industry has never actually sold anything? So they're producing ads, you know, or pitching to a brand, to a bunch of marketers who have also never sold anything. And like you were touching on before, influencers, they're sort of front and center, they got their product in hand, and they're getting that jump because they can sell. Like, how important do you think that ability to sell is in the game?
What's your name, my friend?
Eli.
Eli, are you looking for a job?
Sure.
Eli, I think you're exactly right. I think I learned marketing. I built a local liquor store into a national e-commerce and wine retail business. And I did it through marketing, and the marketing had to drive the business. I think you're touching on the nerve that I stay up late at night thinking about for our industry, because look, I've already achieved many more things than I ever needed to. And so, you know, I know that VaynerMedia is going to be one of the largest agencies in the world. It already is, and it will continue to be. But I actually have fallen in love with this industry, and I don't understand why we as an industry are willing to give up market share to influencers, to platforms, to all the things that are going to take our lunch. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't think people make ads to drive the business results. I think they make things that they want to make in self-interest. They like the idea, or they think it's going to get an award. And so, yeah, I think we're in an echo chamber of people who are not good at marketing. And that's like hard to say, but I think the results are pretty obvious. There's a reason the biggest brands in the world continue to lose market share across the board. It's because smaller brands are out marketing them at scale. We have not reconciled that social media is where brand is being built. We continue to put above the line brand positioning on this pedestal. And so, yeah, I think we're in academia and corporate DNA, not practical business and selling DNA. And I think you're right on it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. There's another one here at the front, the lady in the blue suit.
Hi, Gary, this is Fee. I'm sure you get asked this question a lot, but what is your creative process? Thank you.
Thank you. I think my creative process is paying attention to people and then reverse engineering what I sense they're interested in. So I think, you know, I got trained again back to the liquor store. I But even before then, when I did sports card shows and sold lemonade, I would do a lot of people watching. I would try to figure out what tree or pole to put my lemonade stand sign on. And at trade shows, selling baseball cards and soccer cards and football cards. And I would walk around the show for an hour and try to listen to what people were talking about. So my creative style starts from not what idea do I want, but what do I sense people care about, which is why I fell in love with social media 15 years ago. I could put something out and get real feedback, real consumer insights. And so my creative process starts with, okay, you want to sell a hat or a beverage or a TV show or an electronic, understood. Now let me try to get a sense of what people care about today. What's their pain points? What's happening in popular culture? Where is their attention? Not potential reach, but actualized reach. So, you know, I reverse engineer the emotional truth. Like, is this gonna give them more time with their kids? Is this gonna make them look cool? Is this gonna, you know, solve some sort of emotional or tangible problem? And then I try to communicate in that way. And so for me, the answer, that's a long-winded answer to say I reverse engineer the current pulse of the consumer segmentations I'm trying to sell to.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah, we've got another one right at the front. Thank you.
Hi, Gary. Camille here, content producer at MYOB. Now, I've written my question down because I knew I'd get nervous and forget it. So, and this is a nod to your content piece a few days ago on your Instagram account. So I don't want to be part of a big brand culture that gets stuck in corporate boardrooms discussing if a fresh forward-thinking campaign we want to create is on brand enough. So how do we shift the conversation away from the idea that creative content needs to be on brand to create impact and return on investment and move into conversations about relevance to audience and authentic connection to brand as a leading thought starter?
All right. First of all, I adore you. That's exactly the right thinking. The answer is there's a great Russian saying that my father used to say when I was a kid. I was born in the Soviet Union for context for the audience. And the saying goes like this. Whoever's paying for the music gets to pick the song. So if you're in agency land and you have clients, the only way you can make it happen is by having conviction in what you believe, because it's very hard to convince somebody off of, don't forget, we have to have empathy for them. If they're being measured by on brand, quote unquote, the subjective opinion of their boss and or however the MMM or MMA internally is being scored, they're not gonna put their career in jeopardy for you, for our passion to win on relevance or do something different. Nobody ever gets fired for a TV commercial is a very real, is a real, real, real thing. And so, you know, I think what you need to do, and this is what gets me by every day, is be eyes wide open, understand and have empathy to why they're saying no, but try to find your people. We know at Boehner, for example, that 9 out of 10 people are just not going to buy what I'm putting down or what we're putting down. And that's okay, we understand we're going through a process. So I think for you, so you don't lose your sanity, just keep in mind that it's, you know, you don't want to necessarily beat your head against the wall. It's very hard to convince, but keeping your conviction and finding other potential clients and new clients is how you're gonna do it, because you're either going to, there's two things. We find new people to say yes to it, or we consistently never waver with the clients we have with saying, but that's your subjective opinion in this boardroom. Do you really want to spend all your money putting that out? Why can't we do validating and social or this, that, and the other thing? So, you know, otherwise you're just going to be in a hamster wheel.
Thank you. There's another question just over here.
Hi, Gary. Just a quick one. A lot of your approach has sort of been built around personal connection and replying to DMs and that sort of thing. I just wanted to ask sort of how generative AI fits into that, and does it kind of dilute the value in that approach, or is how do you see it? Is there a place for it?
Yeah, I think it will dilute the approach or add to the approach. Let's talk it out. To your point, when you're intent and you do the right thing, like it works. Like you reply to somebody, you're accountable, you thank them. Manners, civility, things I'm passionate about. To your point, as AI expands and that becomes automatic, it dilutes it. However, if the AI sets up someone like me to be able to then do something being high touch or put in effort, because the AI is analyzing all the messages I get and populating the things that matter to me the most. And then I'm able to actually do it by hand, do a video. So I think AI is a complement as a partner to make me more time efficient so I can do high touch things for 31 people instead of two. That's great. AI, when it's just automatically responding to you with machine learning and says, have a great day, Johnny, and you on the other side now know or can feel that it's not really me, detrimental. So I think the intent is really going to play out to be the key factor in that question.
Thank you. Any other questions from the audience? Don't be shy now. Yep.
Don't be shy now.
Great. Three more hands popped up.
Amazing.
Otherwise, I'll start jumping in with questions.
Hi, Gary. My name's Adam. You've previously spoken about the role of 15-minute meetings in
yes.
life and how you don't go above 15-minute meetings. I've had a small amount of success getting my organization from one-hour meetings down to 50-minute meetings and half an hour down to 20-minute meetings. How do you get them further? How do you get all of your work yeah. done in 15-minute meetings?
So a couple things. It's not that I have plenty of 30s and hours. It's that many of my meetings are 15 minutes, right? And that's because I'm in my business day to day. I have a lot of continuity with my employees. We're able to move quickly. I think it's been fun to watch my organization. I've done a couple of like fun, you know, I don't like to impose a lot. Like I try to motivate my organization through positivity more than negativity, but I've done a couple of random, like, hey, next week, just cut everything in half and just see what it feels like. And it's staggering to me how many people enjoy it and didn't realize how much waste. And I think for everyone here, this is going to resonate. We've all been in meeting. I'm not sure how many meetings I've been in that couldn't have been a little shorter. And I've had unlimited meetings not get reconciled within the time we've allocated, but it feels like that classic thing, like if you have a 5-pound bag, you're going to fit 5 pounds worth of stuff in it. And so I just think it becomes how do you get there? The reason you've had some success is because you've decided to prioritize it. I think for a lot of people here, especially smaller organizations, if you're at the top, you'd be shocked how much hours becoming 30s, 30s becoming 15s can really change your effectiveness. And I think it's really been a big impact for us. We're still just okay at it. Plenty of meetings have way too many people. I always say most of the meetings at Vayner have double the amount of people that need to be in it for double the amount of time. And every day, every year, every time I get on, I get on a hot one about it. We do better and we're better for it because we're able to get bigger raises because of it, hire more people because of it. Effectiveness matters. And so I just think you make it a thing. You make it a religious thing. It's something you care about.
Very true. We had some other questions at the back over here. Could you raise your hand again, please, so the mics can find you? Thank you.
Hey, Gary, how are you doing?
I'm well.
My name's Dom. I'm from the Great Barrier Reef Foundation. So our, you know, I guess, product is beautiful. It's iconic. It's amazing. Okay. However, it's loaded with a weight to it as well. I guess our challenge is trying to compete with, like you said earlier, the Mr. Beasts of the world, get serotonin hits, make people feel like the content's personalized and positive, but it's not enough for us to just be positive. Do you have any tips for someone like us or anyone in an industry or has a product that is loaded with a sense of weight? How can we compete and how do we cut through when the content is quite serious?
You know, I think we get fixated on things. Like there's an enormous amount of properties, companies, entities that are doing extremely well with serious content. I think we get infatuated with the shiny star. You're not competing for the same audience that Mr. Beast is. Just like if I turned on Netflix right now, there's going to be serious and drama and sports and funny. And like, and there's plenty of people that are genuinely interested. And, I think you look at National Nat Geo, you look at the Lincoln Project in the US, which talks about politics. This isn't that you're in trouble because nobody wants it. This is, are we actually good at creative strategy and distribution in a modern world that is predominantly based on this? And even the TVs now, the technology of these is the logic of the Rokus and Netflix and the Hulus and all these streaming services are far more similar to the social platform. So good news, like serious content is crushing. It's that a lot of organizations that tend to go more serious and more thoughtful genres tend to be more conservative with their learnings on how to make their content work. So, you know, I think you look at documentaries that are doing extremely well in marketing and social. Vice, when it's doing its job correctly, does this well. You can win this game. You just have to actually know how to make creative for the distribution that now has the attention of society, which is social and streaming services.
I think we have time for just one more question.
Gary, it's Raman here. You still owe me a reply to my email.
Respect.
I'm the founder of Unleash Health, the world's first social health platform bringing collective power of brands to improve a billion lives by 2033. We know the path to health is not healthcare. You care about health. How would you go about solving for health at scale?
I think storytelling does everything. Religion is built on stories. Government is based on stories. Movements are based on stories. More and more and more stories. I've gone through a health transformation physically over the last 10 years. It was through stories and education, understanding protein and carbs and fascia and soft tissue and just a million different things. And a lot of that education came through contemporary channels and the new world we live in. I think that for a lot of people, health starts here, right? Self-esteem is something I have a huge passion about. Accepting your vulnerabilities and being accountable to knowing you can fix them. And so I think it's storytelling, my friend, which is what's so beautiful about this industry. This room is filled with people that are actual storytellers or managed storytellers, and stories make the world go round. It is how everybody makes decisions. A lot of our geopolitics right now are based on storytelling and distribution, and everybody here can make a huge impact if they understand the contemporary framework of distribution and then how to do creative within it. And so I think that's your mission. I think it's my mission. I think it's the wonderful lady that spoke about the environment. It's her mission. I think all of us should be accountable to be as good at storytelling where the attention actually is. And I think the things we want to happen will then happen. And so for you, it's how do you make videos, pictures, and audio in Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, you know, TikTok. It's just the reality of our world. And really, as a parting shot, until our collective industry understands the power of social media and that the creative in social media is fancy too, is special too, matters too, we will continue to make videos that nobody cares about and distribute them in places nobody's paying attention to. We've got to change that. And I hope all of us can be a contributor to that. And now I got to go to my next thing. And I love all of you. And I hope everybody has the best day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gary. And thank you, everyone, for the questions.
Cheers.